asked me for a story, and you well know that it is not in my nature to deny you. However, I warn you of two things. Firstly, this is not my story, but hers. She lived it, and she wrote it down. She sent me the manuscript shortly before she died. That was 20 years ago. And until now, nobody but me has ever heard it. It is too horrible. And that is my second warning. Her tale is beyond everything. Nothing that I know, nothing at all, touches it for sheer dreadful... for dreadfulness. And who is this mysterious she who plays so large a part in her own story, you might ask? Well, she was 10 years older than I, the most charming person, the most agreeable woman I've ever met in her position. She was my sister's governess, and when I came down from Trinity for my second summer, I found her installed at our place in the country. All my time was spent in her company. I liked her extremely. It was then that she told me her story, and she shall tell it again now. Her story and the children's, Miles and Flora. Two children. And it's the fact that there are two that gives the tale the effect of another turn of the screw. The Turn of the Screw by Henry James. Dramatized for radio by John Tideman. With Charlotte Attenborough as the governess, Rosemary Leach as Mrs. Gross, Sam Crane as Miles, and Sarah Jane Derrick as Flora. The Turn of the Screw.
Therefore, in view of the excellence of your qualifications, stated most charmingly and succinctly in your letter of the 15th instant, in reply to my advertisement in the personal column of the London Times, I would be grateful if you could present yourself at my address in Harley Street, so that we can discuss those details which, I trust, will terminate in my engaging you as governess to the two children.
Oh dear, I should never have come. Two children. And he? What will he be like?
I am a bachelor, ma'am. I am a busy man, and I travel a great deal. The world has been kind to me in the way of worldly riches, and I am prepared in some measure to repay the world by being kind to it. I offer you complete freedom with the children, but on one thing I insist. I am not to be bothered. Do you understand?
Yes, sir.
Not to be troubled in any way. All responsibility will be yours. I know you have only recently passed 20 years, and that your life in a country parsonage has been a secluded one, and that this is the first time you have sought service in the schoolroom. But you are a woman, not a girl, and I think you have understanding.
Thank you, sir.
Now, my nephew and niece have been orphans for just over 2 years, and they are completely in my care. I feel sorry for the poor chicks, but they weigh heavy on my hands and on my time, so I want you to relieve me.
I will attempt to do my best, sir.
Good. Good. I have made my country place, Bly, over to them. It's a big house, but a friendly one, and I've parted with several of my own servants to look after them. You'll find no shortage of labour, I assure you. There's an excellent woman, a Mrs. Gross, in charge of the establishment, and I'm sure you'll like her. Although she's very much the below-stairs type of housekeeper, she's very fond of the children, having none of her own, and they seem somehow to respond to her. But when you get down there, naturally, you will be the supreme authority. I presume, of course, that you do intend to accept my offer.
Oh, yes. Yes, of course.
Of course. The boy, Miles, is away at school. But during the holidays, he, as well as my niece Flora, will be in your charge. I had to send him away, I'm afraid. It was the only thing to be done since the death of the children's last governess.
Death? What did the children's former mistress style?
She just died. It was most unfortunate. But then, people do, don't they? Even young people.
Well, yes, I suppose so.
I hope you won't be lonely down at Bly. As I said, it's a friendly house, full of friends. And you have convinced me that you are, in every sense, the right person for the children. I hope I have managed to convince you.
Oh, you have, you have.
For some applicants, my conditions have sounded prohibitive, especially my main condition.
Your main condition?
That you should never trouble me. Never. You must neither appeal, nor complain, nor write about anything. You must meet all questions yourself without any recourse to me. Money and all that will be dealt with by my solicitor. The rest is up to you. You do promise to leave me entirely alone.
I promise.
I realize what a sacrifice it is for a girl of your years to be making.
Oh, sacrifice is usually rewarded. Or so my father taught me.
And I'm sure your reward will come. I, for one, am most grateful. And I sense the children will welcome you. And Bly, I know you will love the place. Now, since it is probable we will never meet again, take my hand and accept my offers of good fortune and what is possibly goodbye.
Goodbye, sir. And from what you have said, I have no doubts but that I will be extremely happy, both with the children and with Bly.
Here we are, ma'am. Bly, your new home. We all hope you're going to like it here.
Oh, I'm sure I will.
Oh, it's beautiful. Far more beautiful than he ever described it as being.
Well, the master don't like the country, ma'am. And he's too busy on his foreign travels ever to come down here. But the children like it. They made it their own, they have. Two proper little angels they are. Very sad, being left like that.
The boy can't be here very often.
Master Miles is back for the holidays. I have orders to meet him on Friday. A little gentleman he's grown to be. And as for Miss Flora, well, she's the most beautiful child you ever did see.
I'm going to like it here, I know. Something in the atmosphere of the place tells me it's well, good.
Yes, ma'am. Ah, there's Mrs. Gross waiting for you on the steps.
And is that Flora?
Yes, ma'am. That's your new pupil.
She is, without a doubt, the most beautiful child I've ever seen.
To look at, miss, yes. She is, as I said, an angel. They'll fetch her, Larry. Come on, then. Go on.
So you are Mrs. Groves?
Yes, miss.
I heard all about you in Harley Street. I hope you were prepared for my arrival.
The solicitors told us when to expect you, miss. The master never writes. And you are most welcome to Bly. We all hope you'll be very happy here.
I feel at home already.
This is Flora. She insisted on coming out to meet you, although really it's way past the time for her afternoon rest.
Hello, Flora. I hope we are to be friends.
You're so pretty. I know we will be friends. Now I must go and have my rest, or Mrs. Gross will be cross.
Oh, not with you, my pet. Never with you.
After my rest, if you like, I'll show you the nursery and the schoolroom, and then I'll take you down to the lake and show you the view of the house from there.
Oh, please.
So if you'll excuse me. Oh, and I hope you will be happy with all of us at Bly.
She's always shy and formal with strangers, but you'll soon get to know her.
Oh, I'm sure I shall. And the little boy, Miles, does he look like his sister? Is he such an angel?
Oh, miss, if you think well of this one, you will be carried away by the gentleman.
I'm afraid I'm rather easily carried away. Earlier this week, I was a little carried away in London.
In Harley Street?
In Harley Street.
Well, miss, you're not the first, and you won't be the last.
Oh, I've no pretensions to being the only one. In any case, I have promised to have no contact with him.
The master would have insisted on that. He always has. I imagine he explained my position here.
Oh, yes. I am to have complete control of the children, whilst the running of the house and the staff is your affair.
It's a big place to run, miss. Well, it's no use our just standing here. I'm sure you want to see your room. Now, you are to share with little Flora, like the last governess did. Is that acceptable?
Perfectly. It's only right. To watch, teach, and form Flora will make me happy and useful.
And Master Miles?
Well, his teachers are in charge of him while he's at school, of course. But when he's here in the holidays, he'll be entirely in my care. Entirely.
He will be back on Friday, and you will see for yourself what a little gentleman he is. And you will love him, miss. I know you will.
I don't understand.
What's that, miss?
A letter from Miles's uncle with a sealed envelope inside. The enclosed is from the boy's headmaster, and the headmaster's an awful bore. Read his letter, deal with him, but don't report to me, not a word. I'm off. Yours, etc.
You had better do as our employer says. Read the letter.
Yes, of course. What does this mean? The child is being sent home.
But aren't they all?
Oh, being sent home, yes, but only for the holidays. Miles may never go back. He's been expelled from school.
But why? What has he done?
Oh, here, read for yourself, Mrs. Gross.
I'm afraid I can't.
Oh, I'm sorry. Well, the headmaster doesn't go into particulars. He just says that they cannot possibly keep him on. Is he a bad boy, Mrs. Groves?
Does the gentleman say so?
He writes that he's an injury to others.
Master Miles? An injury? Never.
To his poor little innocent playmates, I suppose.
But he's scarcely 10 years old. Oh, it's dreadful to say such a wicked, cruel thing about the child.
Yes, it does seem incredible.
When you see him, miss, you'll know what they say can't be true. Well, you might just as well believe such a thing about Flora. Look at her, bless her.
Yes, indeed. Then I take it you've never known Miles to be bad.
Oh, I wouldn't say that.
You have known him.
Yes, indeed, miss. Thank God.
You mean that a boy who is never bad...
is no boy for me.
You like children with spirit?
Yes, miss.
And so do I, Mrs. Gross. But not to the degree to contaminate.
Contaminate?
Well, to corrupt.
Oh, are you afraid Master Miles will corrupt you?
No, of course not. It's just that... Tell me, Mrs. Gross, what was my predecessor like?
Children's last governess? Well, she was young and pretty. Almost as young and pretty as you.
He seems to like us pretty.
Oh, he did. It was the way he liked everyone. Why, it was the master. I mean, that's his way.
But of whom did you speak first?
Of him.
The master?
Of who else, miss?
Did my predecessor see anything in the boy that wasn't right?
If she did, she never told me.
Was she careful, particular?
About some things, yes.
But not about all?
She's gone, miss. I won't tell tales.
No, of course not. I shouldn't have asked. Did she die here?
No. She went away.
Went away to die? You mean she was taken ill and went home?
No, she wasn't ill. At least, not in this house. She left for her home at the end of a year in order to take a short holiday. But she never came back. At the very moment I was expecting her, I heard from the master that she was dead.
What did she die of?
Please don't ask, miss. I don't know. He never told me. Now, if you'll excuse me, I must get on with my work. There's a lot to be done before Master Miles gets back.
Oh, and I have quite neglected little Flora and her sons. But the headmaster's letter...
Miss?
Yes, Mrs. Gross?
That letter? Don't ask Master Miles about it.
But why?
When you see him, you'll understand. Once you've met the child, you won't be able to mention it. You'll want to forget you ever received such a cruel, wicked thing.
We'll see, Mrs. Gross. We shall see. Hello. I'm Miles. How do you do? Oh, but you were right, my dear good woman. He is an angel. I've never seen such innocence. There's almost something divine about the boy, as though he knows nothing in the world but love.
You have fallen under his charms, miss.
Yes, yes, I am charmed. Utterly. Such purity. And his beauty, you have only to look at him.
I do little else, miss, I can assure you. And that cruel charge.
It doesn't live an instant. It can't.
Then what will you do?
I have already done it. I have locked the letter away. It is forgotten.
But what will you say?
In answer to the letter, nothing.
And to his uncle?
Nothing.
And to the boy?
Nothing.
Oh, miss, thank you. I'll stand by you. And we will see it out.
Yes, dear Mrs. Gross. We will see this out together.
Oh, I was under a charm, as Mrs. Gross had said. That charmed and charming summer, I was in a trap. A trap to my imagination, to my delicacy, perhaps to my vanity, to whatever in me was most excitable. The best way to picture it all is to say that I was off my guard. In those first weeks, the days were long and at their finest. I had accepted the situation of having to give Miles lessons as well as Flora. I was lifted aloft on a great wave of infatuation and pity. For the first time in my life, I knew space and air and freedom, all the music of summer and all the mystery of nature. I felt, too, that I was giving pleasure to him, to that person in Harley Street to whose pressure I had responded. Often on my solitary wanderings around the garden of an evening, I imagined that he would appear there at the turn of a path and would stand before me and smile and approve. The kind light in his handsome face would let me know his gratitude and his approbation. All this was a time of stillness, a time of hush, in which something gathers or crouches. But then it changed, and the change was like the spring of a beast. He stood there. It was as though my imagination had in a flash turned real. He did stand there, not on a turn in a path, but high up on the battlements of a tower at the end of the house, clear in the twilight framed against the gold sky. But the man whose eyes met mine was not the person I had hastily supposed. It was not the image that I had seen in Harley Street, nor anywhere else in the world. The man was unknown to me. We were confronted for long enough for me to ask myself who he was, and although we were too far apart to call to each other, There was a moment at which some challenge, breaking the sudden intense silence, would have been the right result of our straight mutual stare. There was a touch of strange freedom in the sign of familiarity of his wearing no hat. And from his high position, he seemed to fix me with the very question which his presence provoked. He never took his eyes from me, and I returned his gaze, transfixed. Then slowly he turned away, and that was all I knew.
There she is! There she is!
What are you two doing down here? You should be upstairs in the nursery.
We were waiting for you to tell us a story.
Oh, I'm sorry, Miles. I'm too tired.
But you promised.
They've been looking all over the house for you, miss. They wouldn't leave me alone.
But why did you go out without a hat on? You never let me go out without a hat. And your feet are all wet.
I only went for a short walk. Now, Miles, take Flora upstairs. I'll be with you presently. Off you go.
Very good. Come on, Flora. Give me your hand.
Yes, ma'am.
What's the matter, miss?
Matter? You look quite pale.
Do I?
I must have walked further than I thought.
Oh, and the hem of your dress is all wet.
It's the dew.
Miss Flora was right. You never allow the children to go out like that. You must take more care.
For their sakes, yes.
Yes, miss. Now, I'll go and get ready some hot chocolate. Oh, you worry me this evening. I hope you haven't taken a chill.
Thank you, Mrs. Groves. Chocolate will be very welcome. Oh, my dear two little innocents. What things in the world matter when you are around? The constant joy of you, my children, can sustain me through all my pains, through all my fears.
Children! Children, hurry down or we'll be late for the service.
Mrs. Gross, could you help Flora button her coat?
Of course.
And Miles, don't forget to bring down the prayer books. They're on the schoolroom table.
Oh, thank heaven the rain stopped.
Really would have been impossible to have gone this morning.
Well, I'll take an umbrella, just in case. Now, where are Flora's hat and gloves?
Gloves? That reminds me. I left mine on the table in the drawing room. I'll just get them.
He was there, on the other side of the window, looking in, looking straight at me. Nearer this time than before. A nearness that somehow represented a forward step in our intercourse, that made me catch my breath and turn cold. He remained at the window but a few seconds, long enough to convince me he also saw and recognized. But it was as if I had been looking at him for years and years, and had known him always. His stare into my face was as deep and hard as it had always been, but it quitted me for a moment, and fixed successively on other things. Then suddenly, I was shocked by a certainty. It was not for me that he had come. He had come for someone else. The flash of this knowledge, for it was knowledge in the midst of dread, gave me a courage that propelled me out of doors, round the corner of the house and along the terrace. But my visitor had vanished. The terrace, the lawn and the garden beyond, all I could see of the park, were empty with a great emptiness. Then, instinctively, I went to the window and stood where he had stood. I applied my face to the window pane and looked as he had looked into the room. Just then, Mrs. Gross came into the room and pulled up short as I had done, stared as I had done, and turned as white as I must have done. Then she left the room and traced my footsteps out onto the terrace where I stood. She was scared. But why? Why?
What in the name of goodness is the matter?
Do I look as if anything is the matter?
You look awful. You're as white as a sheet.
Oh, my dear, take my hand. Hold it. You came for me to go to church, of course. But I can't go now.
Has anything happened?
Yes. How did I look when you saw me through this window?
Dreadful.
Oh, I've been frightened. When you saw me looking in, you were seeing the effect of my sight. But what I had seen just before was much worse.
What was it?
A man. An extraordinary man looking in.
Where is he now?
I don't know.
Have you seen him before?
Yes, once, on the old tower.
Why didn't you tell me?
There were reasons.
And you've seen him nowhere but on the tower?
Except just now.
Was he a gentleman?
Oh, no.
Nobody from about the place?
Nobody, I'm sure.
And what is he?
Oh, he's a horror. Oh, God, help me if I know what he is.
Well past time for church.
Uh-oh. I'm not fit for church.
You're afraid?
Yes, I'm afraid of him.
How long is it since you first saw him?
About the middle of the month. Around this time of evening. Although it was growing dark, I saw him as clearly as I see you now.
He only watches?
Yes. And I hope it will be confined to that.
How long was he here?
Until I came round to meet him.
That was brave. I couldn't have come out.
Well, neither could I, but I did. I have my duty. I fear for them.
The children?
Well, don't you fear for them?
Tell me, what was he like?
He has no hat. Red, curling hair, and a long, pale face with good features. Red whiskers and dark eyebrows. His eyes are small and very sharp, very fixed. He has a wide mouth with thin lips, hard lips. Somehow, he has all the appearance of an actor.
An actor?
Well, not that I've ever met an actor, but he's how I imagine them to be. But he's never... Oh, never a gentleman.
Him a gentleman?
You know him.
But he is handsome.
Oh, remarkably.
And dress?
I think he wears someone else's clothes.
The master's.
Then you do know him.
Quint.
Quint?
Peter Quint. Master's man. His valet when he was here. Never wore his hat, but well, several waistcoats were missing. They were both here last year. Then the master went, and Quint was here alone.
With the children?
He was in charge.
Well, what became of him?
God knows. He died.
Died?
Yes, miss. Peter Quint is dead.
Dead? When did he die? How?
Some months before you came. A labourer found him early one morning, lying dead on the road from the village. There was a wound to his head. Such a wound as might have been caused by a slip in the dark after leaving the public house with too much liquor inside him. But that's what the inquest said. But there was a lot of chatter, and Quint's death raised lots of stories. Terrible things were said. Dark things. Vices and strange disorders. And unspeakable things. Things that... Well, I couldn't tell you. But why? Why should he come back?
He was looking for Miles. I can see that now.
How do you know?
I just know. And what is more, you know too, my dear, don't you?
But what if Master Miles should see him?
That is what he wants,
child.
For the children to see him. Oh, I must protect them from him. It seems strange that they have never mentioned anything about him ever.
The little Flora is too young, she wouldn't remember.
But Miles would know.
Ah, don't try him, miss.
Oh, don't worry, I won't. But even so, it is odd.
Oh, they were great friends. Yeah, but really it was all Quint's fancy. He used to play with the child. Spoil him. Quint was too free.
Too free with my boy?
Too free with everyone.
Then it was well known that he was bad?
Not well known. I knew it. But the master didn't.
And you never told him?
He didn't like tale-telling. He hated complaints. He didn't like being bothered.
I would have told him.
I was afraid.
Of what?
Of things that man could do. How Quint was so clever. Deep.
But aren't you afraid of his effect on the children?
They weren't my responsibility. They were in his charge.
And you could bear that?
No. No. I couldn't. I couldn't. And I can't bear it now.
But I must. I must bear it now and for as long as they need me. I must stand before them as a screen. It is my duty to protect them. And the more I see, the less will my little innocence be aware of this evil horror.
But shortly I was saved from this madness, from myself. My resolution was superseded by horrible proofs. Yes, I see proofs. This came from an afternoon hour which I happened to spend in the grounds with Flora. We had left my eyes on the red cushion of a window seat deep in a book. I was aware afresh with her how, like her brother, she contrived to let me alone without appearing to drop me, and to accompany me without appearing to surround. On this present occasion, I was supposed to be embodying some important historical personage, and Flora was playing very hard. We were on the edge of the lake, which, because of something lately begun in geography, had become the Sea of Azov. Suddenly, I was aware that we were not alone. But on the other side of the Sea of Azov, there was an interested spectator watching us. A third person whose right of presence I immediately questioned. I knew it to be an apparition. My heart stood still with terror, and I wondered whether little Flora would see it too. I awaited some sudden innocent sign of interest or alarm from her. But none came. Purposefully, she turned her back on the water and the awful figure. With firm conviction, she interested herself in two pieces of wood and began to play with them intently. I realized what she was doing and turned my eyes to face what I had to face.
They know. They know. It's too monstrous, Mrs. Gross. They do know.
But what?
They know all that we know, and heaven knows what else besides.
But how?
2 hours ago, in the garden, Flora saw.
She has told you?
That's the horror. She kept it to herself, not a word from the child.
Why, how can you be sure?
I was there. I saw with my eyes, saw that she was perfectly aware.
Aware of him?
No. Of her. A woman this time. But again a figure of unmistakable horror and evil. She was dressed in black. Pale, dreadful. On the other side of the lake.
How did she come to be there?
From wherever it is they come from. She just appeared and stood there.
A long way off.
Yes, but in feeling she seemed as close to me as you are now.
You've never seen her before?
Never. But the child has. And yes, you have. It was my predecessor, the one who died.
Miss Jessel?
Miss Jessel, I know it.
How can you be sure?
Ask Flora, she knows. No, don't ask Flora, she'll lie.
How can you say that?
Because I am certain now that Flora doesn't want me to know.
Oh, if that's the case, then it's only to spare you.
Oh, no. It's because there are depths. Depths. The more I go over it, the more I see in it. And the more I see in it, the more I fear. I don't know what I don't see, what I don't fear.
You mean you are afraid of seeing her again?
No, I'm afraid of not seeing her.
No, I don't understand.
Don't you realize? Flora will keep up this pretense.
Perhaps Flora doesn't mind the apparition. Perhaps she likes it.
How can a mere child like such things?
Isn't that just a proof of her blessed innocence?
Oh, let us hope so. or if it isn't, it's a proof of... God alone knows what. For that woman's a horror of horrors. I'm certain of it.
How do you know?
By seeing her. By the way she looked.
At you?
Oh, no, she never looked at me. She only fixed the child with her awful eyes.
With hate?
Oh, God help us, no. With something much worse. With determination. With a kind of fury of intention.
Intending what?
To get hold of her. Possess her. And that's what Flora knows.
She wore black, you say?
Yes, as if in mourning. But she had a kind of extraordinary beauty. Beautiful, but infamous.
Miss Jessel was infamous. They were both infamous.
So there was something between her and Peter Quint.
In spite of the difference of rank between them, yes.
She was a lady, I saw that.
And he's so dreadfully below. Yet she did what he wished.
With her?
With all of them.
But it must have been what she wished too.
Poor woman. She paid for it.
Then you do know what she died of?
No. I know nothing. I wanted not to know. I was just glad that she was well out of this.
Then you had your own idea about her reasons for leaving.
She couldn't have stayed here. A governess? Afterwards, I imagined... And what I still imagine is too dreadful.
Not as dreadful as mine. Oh, it's too much.
Oh, there, my poor dear.
I don't do it. I don't save them or shield them. It's far worse than I dreamed. They're already lost. Utterly lost.
The children are safely asleep, Miss, and the rest of the servants have gone to their quarters.
Good. Sit down then, Mrs. Gross.
Thank you, Miss.
My mind has been racing. And there are things we must talk out. Of one thing I must be sure.
Yes, Miss?
You don't doubt me in any way. Don't doubt the truth of what I've seen.
Well, lass, no. I recognize them both from your descriptions. But one thing I beg of you, Miss.
Yes?
Forget all you've told me.
Don't you think that I have any greater wish than to escape from these horrors? But they will appear again and again, of that I am sure. I must learn to accustom myself to their presence. Despite their communion with these creatures, the children do give me a kind of strength. Their voices, their fragrant faces against my cheek, the pressure on my heart make all fall away except their helplessness and their beauty. I find it hard to believe that they are as cunning as Flora's behavior this afternoon leads me to suspect.
It was Quint who taught the boy to be bad. For several months, they were together every hour of the day. Quint was like a tutor to him.
But what about their governess, Miss Jessel?
Oh, she didn't forbid him. You see, she had the little lady.
Couldn't you have tried to separate Quint from the boy?
I told Master Miles that I like to see young gentlemen remember their station.
And he replied?
He denied their relationship.
I see. He lied. And what about Quint's relationship with Miss Jessel? Did Miles know what was going on between those two wretches?
I don't know, Miss. I don't know.
But you do, you dear thing. You must. Miles covered and concealed their relationship. Oh, what they have made of him.
Well, he's different now.
No wonder you were upset when you heard he had been expelled. You knew he was a fiend at school.
But I always forgave him. Wouldn't you?
Oh, yes, yes, I would. However, I feel that I must now watch him very carefully.
Surely you don't accuse him of hiding anything?
I won't make any accusations until I have further evidence.
And for that, I suppose, I must just wait. I waited and waited. And the days as they elapsed took something from my consternation. The children during this period were extravagantly fond of me, truly lavish in their homage. They had never, I think, wanted to do so many things for their poor protectress. They had never played harder or more amusingly, and never had their lessons been better. I began to surrender again to their childish grace, and used to worry lest my little charges should guess that I thought strange things about them. During all this time that I was in their close company, and I was careful never to be out of it, I could follow no scent very far. We lived in a cloud of music and love and success and private theatricals, and if the children were simply practicing diplomacy, it was without grossness. Then after a lull, grossness did break out. One evening, with nothing to lead up to it or prepare for it, I felt again the cold touch of the impression that had breathed upon me the night of my arrival. I had not gone to bed, but sat reading, Fielding's Amelia, I think it was, by the light of two candles in my room. The white curtain of Flora's little bed shrouded the perfection of childish rest close by me. Suddenly, my author's spell was shattered. I sensed there was something undefinably astir in the house. I looked hard at the door. Yes. Soft breath from the open window gently moved the half-drawn blind. Then with deliberation, I put down my book, took up a candle, and went out of the room, locking the door behind me. Holding my candle high, I went along the landing till I came within sight of the tall window that presided over the great turn of the staircase. My candle went out. And there, in the early morning light from the window, I saw him. Peter Quaint. He was halfway up the staircase and right opposite me. He stopped and fixed me with a stare, just as he had done from the tower and from the terrace. We faced each other in our common intensity. He knew me as I knew him. He was a living, detestable, dangerous presence. But I met him and measured him and was not afraid. And he knew I had no terror. We gazed in dead silence. It was as hideous and human as a real interview, and only unnatural in that we did not speak. If I had met a murderer at such an hour in such a place, at least we would have spoken. So long were we there that I began to doubt if I were in life. Then, still in silence, the figure turned and went down the staircase into the darkness and was gone. He had gone. Gone.
Flora? Flora, my dear. She's gone. That's empty, Flora!
Did you want me? You naughty, where have you been?
Oh, Flora, what are you doing out of bed? Why were you hiding behind the curtains? Were you trying to frighten me?
I woke up and you weren't there.
Oh, my angel. Let me hold you. Flora, were you looking for me? Did you think I might be out walking in the grounds?
Well, you know, I thought someone was.
And did you see anyone? Tell me the truth.
No one.
Oh, my little darling.
There was no one there.
But you do see someone. You know that you do. And you suspect that I believe that you do. So why not confess it to me? So that we may at least live with it together and perhaps learn from the strangeness of our fate where we are and what it means.
Ow! You're hurting me!
Oh, my darling, why do you hide away? Why did you pull the curtain round?
Because I don't like to frighten you.
But if I had gone out as you thought...
Oh, but I knew that you would come back. And you have come back.
Yes, I have. Now into bed with you, Flora, or you will get cold.
Yes, my dear. As you say.
And never do that again, Flora. Because you did frighten me. And you know that you did, don't you? ¶¶
that night on, I sat up awake until my roommate unmistakably slept. Then I would steal out and take noiseless turns on the landing. But I never met Quince there again. One night, I recognized the presence of the woman, sitting on the stairs with her back to me, her body half bowed, and her head in her hands in an attitude of woe. Then suddenly she vanished, and was nowhere to be seen. On the 11th night after my third encounter with Peter Quint, Laura again got up from her bed whilst I was dozing, and was again at the window peering out into the night. Hidden, protected, absorbed, she was face to face with the apparition we had met at the lake, and could now communicate with it as she had then not been able to do. She had given herself up. I managed to get to the door and through it without Flora hearing me. Opposite me was Miles's room. Was he at his window? No, he might be asleep. He might be innocent. And besides, the visitor prowling in the grounds was the one with whom Flora was engaged, not my boy. I resolved to look out, and entering an empty room to the left, went to the window. There was a strong moon that night, and on the lawn, diminished by distance, I could discern a figure looking up at me. Or rather, at something above me. There was another person above me, on the tower. And the presence on the lawn was not in the least what I had confidently conceived. It was poor little Miles himself.
Get into bed, Miles. You have made me very angry. There. Now, Miles, you must tell me the truth. Why did you go out? What were you doing in the garden?
If I tell you why, will you understand?
Yes, Miles, I think I will.
Well, so that you should do what you are doing.
And what is that?
Why, thinking that I really am bad, for a change.
Then you didn't undress at all?
No, I sat up and read.
And when did you go down to the terrace?
At midnight, on the stroke. You see, when I'm bad, I'm very bad.
But how could you be sure that I would know about it?
Oh, I arranged that with Flora.
What?
She was to get up and look out of her window.
Which she did.
Then you would look out to see what she was looking at. And you would see me.
Whilst you caught your death of cold out on the lawn in the night air.
Well, how else, my dear, could I have been bad enough? Tell me that.
It was a challenge, Mrs. Gross. And that's what he gave them a taste of at school.
Lord, are you sure?
I'm certain that the four of them are forever meeting.
Oh.
It's the children's systematic silence that makes me so sure. Never by the slip of a tongue have they so much as alluded to either of their old friends. Any more than Miles has alluded to his expulsion. And all we can do is sit here and look at them.
Yes, look at them. The way he's reading to his little sister, they're like two angels.
But even while they pretend to be lost in their fairy tale, they're steeped in their vision of the dead restored. He's not reading to her. They're talking of them. They're talking horrors, I know.
What else do you know?
I know that it's all a game. They're more than earthly beauty. Their unnatural goodness. It's all part of a contrived policy of fraud.
You must admit they have been good.
No, they've been absent. It's been easy to live with them because they're leading a life of their own. They're not mine. They're not ours. They're his and hers.
Quint and that woman?
Quint and that woman's. They want to get our children.
But for what?
For the love of all the evil that in those dreadful days the pair put into them. To fill them with evil still. To keep up the work of demons. That's what brings the couple back.
Yes.
What Mark and Quint and Miss Jessel now do?
Do? Don't they do enough? They can destroy the children. They don't know how yet, but they're trying hard. Well, so far they're only seen at a distance, but there is a deep design to shorten that distance. It's only a question of time.
Before the children come to them
and perish in the attempt. Unless we can prevent it.
Their uncle must take them away.
Who's to make him?
You, miss.
By writing to say that his house is poisoned and his nephew and niece mad? I? Who am supposed to give him no worry?
Make him come to you.
Him? To me?
He ought to be here. He ought to help.
Can you really see me asking him for a visit? No, it's out of the question, Mrs. Bruce.
Yes, miss.
If you should lose your head so far as to appeal to him for me, I warn you, I would leave you on the spot, both him and you.
The summer had turned. The summer had gone. The autumn had dropped upon Bly and blown out half our lights. The place, with its grey sky and withered garlands, was like a theatre after the performance, all strewn with crumpled playbills. There were states of air, conditions of sound and of stillness, which brought back to me that first June meeting with Peter Quint. There was many a corner round which I expected to come upon him, many a sinister situation which would have favoured Miss Jessel. But I met neither of the infamous pair, and we remained unmolested. With the children, I had a tacit agreement never to mention the subject which so obsessed me. I longed to make a direct accusation, but somehow they forced delicacy upon me, and I entered into their game of silence. Even so, I was unable to rid myself of the cruel idea that Miles and Flora saw even more than I knew. Terrible and unguessable things that sprang from their relationship in the past. However, in spite of my tension and of their triumph, I never lost patience with them. Then relief came. The sort of relief that a snap brings to a strain, or the burst of a thunderstorm to a day of suffocation. And when the change came, it came with a rush. We were walking to Sunday church one clear autumn morning. Flora was ahead with Mrs. Gross, and Miles, sprucely dressed by his uncle's tailor, and with the grand air of one aware of the rights of his sex and situation, was walking like a little gentleman silently at my side. We continued for some while in this way. Then when he spoke, the curtain rose on the last act of my dreadful drama.
Look here, my dear. When in the world, please, am I going back to school?
What did you say, Miles?
When am I going back to school? I mean, for a fellow to be with the lady always.
And always the same lady?
Well, I know she's a jolly perfect lady, but after all, I'm a fellow that's, well, getting on, you see.
Yes, you're getting on.
But I have been awfully good, haven't I?
No, Miles, I can't say that.
Except for that one night.
Which night would that be?
Why, when I went down. Went out of the house.
Oh, yes. But I forget now what you did it for.
Why, to show you this I could.
Ah, yes. And you could.
And I can again.
But you won't. Will you, Miles?
Not that again. That was nothing.
No, nothing at all.
You still haven't said when I'm going back to school.
Were you very happy at school?
I'm happy enough anyway.
Then if you're happy here...
Oh, but I don't know as much as I want to. I want to see more life.
I see. Well, we're here now and must go in. We'll talk about it all later.
I want my own sort.
There are not many of your own sort, Miles.
Except perhaps dear little Blanche.
Would you compare me with that baby girl?
Why, don't you love your sweet sister?
If I didn't, and you too. If I didn't.
Yes, Miles. If you didn't.
Well, you know what.
Do I?
Does my uncle think what you think?
How do you know what I think?
I mean, does he know?
Know what, Miles?
Why, the way I'm going on.
I don't think your uncle cares very much.
Then don't you think he can be made to?
In what way?
By his coming down to Blythe.
Who will get him to come down?
I will. I promise you I will. Now, my dear, are you coming into church with me?
But I didn't follow him. I just sat there on a tombstone until I had grasped the full implication of what my little friend had said. He had revealed to me both a consciousness and a plan. It was as if to say, either you clear up with my guardian the mystery of this interruption of my studies, or you cease to expect me to lead with you a life that's so unnatural for a boy. He had gathered my feelings as far as his uncle was concerned, and had used my fear of troubling that person to gain his own freedom. And there was only one end to my predicament. I must give the whole thing up. Now, whilst almost the entire household was at church, I must collect my things and go from Bly. Back at the house, all was a Sunday stillness in which I met no one. My quickness would have to be remarkable if I were to catch a train, and the problem of a conveyance to the station had to be settled. Tormented by difficulties, I made my way to the schoolroom, where there were objects belonging to me which I would have to take. I ascended the great staircase, went along the corridor, and opened the door. There, sitting at my schoolroom table, was the specter of that most horrible of women. Her arms were resting on the table, and her head was supported by her hands in an attitude of weariness. Dark as midnight in her black dress, her pale beauty haggard with unutterable woe, she was all before me, dishonored and tragic. As I stood there, she rose and looked at me long enough to indicate that I was the intruder, not her. I cried out,
"You terrible, miserable woman!"
I think she heard me. For the next moment, there was nothing in the room but the sunshine and a sense that I must stay.
Whatever happened to you, miss? Why didn't you come into church with Master Miles?
Oh, I only went to church with you for the walk. Then I had to come back to meet a friend.
A friend?
Oh, yes, Mrs. Gross, I have a couple. Did the children say anything about my absence?
They asked me not to mention it, because you would prefer it.
But why?
Master Miles said that we must all do nothing but what you like, and I agreed.
That was sweet of him. Even so, all is now out between Miles and me.
What is out?
Well, everything. That's why I came back home for a talk with Miss Jessel.
She spoke?
It came to that.
What did she say?
That she suffers the torments of the damned. And that's why she wants little Flora. To share them with her.
Oh, no, miss.
However, I'm not worried anymore. I've made up my mind.
Yes?
I have determined to send for their uncle.
Oh, in pity, Miss Doom.
I see now, it's the only way. For little Miles thinks I'm afraid to, and I must show him that he's mistaken. If his uncle reproaches me for having done nothing more about the school, I'll tell him the awful reason. I'll do what I should have done long before. I'll show him the headmaster's letter.
Oh, no, miss, don't.
I'll tell him that I can't work out the problems of a child who's been expelled for wickedness.
But we're not sure of that.
What else is it for, then? Is he stupid? Untidy? Or sick? Is he ill-natured? No. He is exquisite. It can only be for wickedness.
And it's his uncle's fault. He left the boy here with that couple.
He didn't know them. I did. It's my fault, Miss, mine.
You shan't suffer, Mrs. Grant.
The children shan't. Please, you needn't tell him. I'll tell him.
But how?
The bailiff. I'll tell him. He writes my letters for me.
And should you really like him to write our story?
Oh, no, miss. Oh, heavens, no. You write.
Yes, I will. I'll write to their uncle tonight.
That evening, the weather changed, and I sat beneath the lamp with a blank sheet of paper before me, listening to the elements. What in reality I was listening for was some betrayal of Miles not being at rest. My obsession finally led me to take up a candle and cross the passage to Miles's room. No sooner had I reached the outside of his door than a voice cried out,
"I say, you out there? What are you up to? Come in."
"Miles, how did you know I was out there? Do you think you made no noise? Then you weren't asleep."
"Not much. I lie awake and think."
"What do you think of?"
"Of you, my dear, of course."
"As proud as I am of that, I would far rather you went to sleep."
"I also think about this strange business of ours."
"What strange business, Miles?"
"Why, the way you bring me up. And all the rest."
"The rest?"
"Oh, you know."
"If it's school that troubles you, Miles, of course you shall go back. Not to the old place, but to a new one, a better one. Do you know you've never said a word about your last school?"
"Haven't I?"
"No, not once since you came back. Nothing about your masters, your friends, what happened there. So I'm completely in the dark. In fact, you've never said anything about your previous life. You just seem to accept the present. Until you spoke to me on the way to church this morning, I naturally thought you wanted to go on as you are."
"I don't. I want to get away."
"You're tired of Bly?"
"Oh, no. I like Bly."
"Well, then, you know what a boy wants." "You want to go to your uncle?"
"My uncle must come down, and you must settle things completely."
"If we do, you can be sure that you will have to go away."
"But that's just what I'm working for. Don't you understand? There's a tremendous lot you'll have to tell him."
"And how much will you tell him, Miles? There are things he'll ask you."
"Oh? What things?"
"Why, the things you've never told me. He'll have to know them in order to make up his mind what to do with you. He can't send you back."
"Oh, I don't want to go back. I want something new."
"Dear, dear little Miles. Is there nothing? Nothing at all that you want to tell me?"
"I told you this morning."
"That you just want me not to worry you?"
"To let me alone."
"Tell me what happened before."
"Before what?"
"Before you came back from school. And before you went away to school."
"What's happened?"
"Oh, Miles, if only you knew how I want to help you. But I'd rather die than give you pain or do you wrong. I'd rather die than hurt a hair of you. But, oh, my dear little Miles, I just want you to help me to save you." "The candle's gone out."
"Why, you blew it out, my dear."
"I blew it out."
Mrs. Rose!
"Did you write last night?"
"Yes, the letter's in my pocket. But what worries me at the moment is Flora."
"Flora?
Where is she? I was with Miles in the schoolroom. He was playing the piano." "Oh, I see it now. He played like one enchanted. He charmed me. He played me to sleep, and now she's gone."
"But she must be upstairs."
"No, I have a feeling she's at a distance."
"She's gone out without a hat?"
"Isn't that woman always without one?"
"You mean she's with Miss Jessel?"
"Yes, she's with her. We must find them."
But what about Miles?"
"Oh, he's with Quint, playing the piano. They've successfully worked their little plan. He found the most divine way to keep me quiet whilst his little sister went off."
"A divine way?"
"Infernal way, then."
"But you don't mind leaving him?"
With Gwynt? No, I don't mind that now.
But because of your letter.
Exactly. I shall leave it here on the hall table for Luke to find.
Stay.
Then we must go down to the lake. For that surely is where Flora and Miss Jessel are. Alone.
But you can't go out like that, wearing nothing against the cold.
Well, what do I care when the child wears nothing? I can't wait to dress. If you want to, I'll have to leave you with a pair of them upstairs.
Oh, no, miss.
Not with them.
Miss, you don't think she's in the lake?
Maybe, though it's nowhere very deep. But I think it more likely that she's across the lake. On the very spot where she and I saw the apparition the other day.
When she pretended not to see.
Yes. I've been sure all along that she wanted to go back there alone. And now, her brother and his friends have managed it for her.
Do you really think they talk about them?
Oh, I'm certain they say things that if we heard them, would simply appall us.
And if Flora is there, then is Miss Jessel there as well?
Oh, beyond any doubt. We shall see. She's not there.
I can't see a trace of either of them.
No, no, wait. What? The boat's gone from its mooring place. Flora has taken it.
Then where is it?
Oh, not seeing it is the strongest proof. You'd see it if it had just drifted away. She's used it to cross to the other bank. And then she's managed to hide it.
All alone? That child?
She's not alone. And at such times, she's not a child, Mrs. Gross. She's an old, old woman.
Look.
Huh? I'm sure I can just make out the shape of the boat. And still, behind that clump of trees near the water's edge.
But if the boat's there, where's Flora?
That's what we must find out.
By going all the way round.
Of course, it won't take more than 10 minutes. Even so, it's far enough for the child to prefer not to walk. She rode straight across. Come on.
Stop. There she is. See?
Oh,
poor little thing.
She sees. But she's pretending she hasn't. She's picking some ferns as though it were the most innocent thing in the world.
Flora! Flora!
Mrs. Gross, good afternoon.
Oh, my little pet, my darling, we found you. Oh, my poor little child, now what are you doing out here?
Just picking these for you. But what are you doing? Why aren't you both dressed for going out? Where are your things?
Where yours are, Flora. Back at the house.
And where's Miles?
I'll tell you that, my dear. If you tell me, where is Miss Jessel?
She's there.
She's there. Don't look at me, Flora. Don't look at me in the way she looks at me. Look at her, your friend. You little unhappy thing. She's there. There, there. And you can see her as well as you can see me. So look. Look.
Where?
To be sure, I can't see anything.
She's there on the other side of the lake.
At the very spot where you and I were standing about 10 minutes ago.
Well, I can't see her. And I think it's a dreadful turn to have in front of the child.
You mean you can't see her as we do? You don't see her now? Why, she's as big as a flaming fire. Only look, dear woman, look.
She isn't there, Flora, my sweet. Nobody's there, and you never saw anything. How can you have seen Miss Jessel when poor Miss Jessel's dead and buried? We know, don't we, pet? It was all a mistake, a joke. And we'll go home as fast as we can.
Surely you can see her!
I don't know what you mean. I see nobody. I see nothing. I never have. I think you're cruel, and I don't like you. I want Mrs. Gross.
Yes, my darling, my angel.
Take me away. Take me away, oh please, take me away from her.
From me?
Yes, from you. From you.
That's what she tells you to say, isn't it, Flora? That woman watching us on the other bank. That's what she wants, and that's what she shall have. I've lost you. I can see that now. I've interfered, and Miss Jessel has shown you how to meet it.
I've done my best, but I've lost you.
Oh, Major,
Mrs. Gross, leave me. Go.
Miles, come back. Wake up. I brought you your morning tea.
Oh, Mrs. Gross. There was no need for you to bring it.
Put the tray on the table.
Oh, I feel so cold. Mortally cold. I don't think I shall ever be warm again.
I'll get a shawl, miss.
No amount of clothes will make any difference. But thank you, Mrs. Groves. You still haven't told me why you've come.
It's Flora, miss. I'm so worried about her.
I know she refused to see me yesterday when I got back from the lake.
She says she'll never see you again.
What do you mean?
She says you are wicked and that she hates you.
I'm wicked? Not her former governess.
She's very feverish, miss, and I fear that shortly she might become seriously ill. And even in her fever, she did I see Miss Jessel yesterday. Or at any time.
Oh, I was foolish yesterday, I know. And Flora resents my imputation on her truthfulness.
As though she were some grand lady. She certainly has put on a grand manner.
Apart from her denials, has she said anything at all about Miss Jessel?
Not a word, miss. And I can't contradict her denying that she saw Miss Jessel by the lake.
Oh, Flora's clever. And their two infamous friends have made both children still cleverer than nature did. Oh, they were easy material. Flora will work her grievance to the end.
To what end?
Why, to get rid of me. She'll make out to her uncle that I'm the lowest creature in the world.
But he thinks so well of you.
He has a strange way of showing it. Look, Mrs. Gross, my leaving here will solve nothing. It won't do. So if Flora refuses to so much as look at me, she must go. You must take her away.
Where to?
Away from them. And most of all, away from me. You must take her straight to London to her uncle.
But you tell him...
I have an answer to that. Your loyalty and Miles' loyalty.
Miles?
Oh, I think so. If I am left alone with him, I think I can win him over. But one thing, Mrs. Gross.
Yes, miss?
Miles mustn't see Flora, not for an instant, before you take her away.
No.
They haven't met since yesterday, have they?
Well, I can't be sure, miss. I have been with Flora most of the time, but on occasions I have left her with only one of the maids looking over her.
I see.
Tell me, miss, what makes you so sure of the little gentleman?
Oh, I'm not sure of anyone but you, Mrs. Gross. But I think he wants to speak. Last evening he sat with me for 2 hours by the fire, and I felt certain he wanted to give me an opening.
Did he say anything?
No, but somehow in the silence I felt it coming, the truth. I just need a little more time.
How much time?
A day or two should bring it out. Then he'll be on my side.
And if you don't succeed...
If I fail, then I fail. And I hope you will have been of service to me in town with their uncle. That is, unless you want not to go.
Oh, I'll go, miss. And I shall tell him all. I'll take Flora away this very morning. She mustn't stay in this place any longer than necessary. And...
Yes?
I can't stay here any longer either.
Then you have seen...
I have heard... I've heard horrors from that child, shocking things for a child to know, and set in such language. Wherever she picked up such words, I can't bear it.
If you can't bear it, how can you...
Stop with her. Why, to get her away from here, from them.
Then in spite of yesterday, you do believe...
Oh, yes, miss, I believe.
Oh, my dear good woman... I cannot tell you how relieved that makes me. We are together.
Yes, miss.
Now, my letter will have reached town before you get there. So when you see the master,
you...
Your letter never went, miss.
What happened to him?
Goodness knows.
Master Miles was...
He took it? When I came back from the lake with Miss Flora, the letter wasn't on the hall table, so I asked Luke if he had posted it. But he said there hadn't been a letter on the hall table.
You see?
I see. That if Miles took it, he would have read it and destroyed it.
But don't you see anything else? Don't you see what he must have done at school?
He stole letters.
The one he stole yesterday won't give him much advantage. For in it I only asked his uncle for an interview. But it was the shame of what he had done that prompted his need to confess to me last night.
Oh, I pray that you get it out of him whilst I'm away.
I'll get it out of him. Don't you worry, Mrs. Gross. He'll meet me. He'll confess. And if he confesses, he's saved. And if he's saved...
Then you are.
Then we shall all be saved. Now take Flora to town and leave Miles and I together. Goodbye, my dear Mrs. Gross.
Goodbye, miss.
Have you had enough to eat, Miles?
Yes, thank you. And thank you for letting me carve the mutton. It's what a man should do. And one day I will be as good at it as Luke.
I'm sure you will, Miles.
Now that Flora has gone, are you and I always to have meals together here in the dining room?
It's more sensible than you having them on your own in the nursery, isn't it?
Oh, yes.
Yes.
I say, my dear, is she really very awfully ill?
Little Flora? Not so bad that she won't be better very shortly. London will set her up. You see, Bligh had ceased to agree with her.
Did Bligh start to disagree with her all of a sudden?
Not so suddenly as you might think. I had seen it coming on for some time.
And why didn't you get her away before?
Before what?
Before she became too ill to travel.
She's not too ill to travel, though she might have become so if she had stayed. I had Mrs. Gross take her away at precisely the right moment.
I see. So now, we are alone?
More or less, but not entirely. We shouldn't like that, should we?
No, I suppose we shouldn't. Of course we have the others.
We have the others, yes.
But even though we do have them, they don't count for much, do they?
It depends what you mean by much, doesn't it?
Oh, yes. Everything depends. Can I please get down now, my dear?
Yes, of course you can.
He left the table and went to the great high window that looked out onto the terrace and out towards the grounds. It was that same window through which, that Sunday in June, I had seen Peter Quint for the second time. Miles rested his forehead against the glass and looked out, contemplating the stupid shrubs and the dull things of November. Suddenly, I received from the boy's embarrassed back the impression that I was no longer barred. Yet somehow he was barred. He was shut in or shut out. The frames and squares of the great window presented an image for him of a kind of failure. He seemed to be looking through the haunted pane for something he couldn't see, and he appeared anxious. For this was the first time in the whole business that he had ever known such a lapse. When he turned to speak to me, I felt that a part of his mask had dropped.
Well, I think I'm glad Bligh agrees with me.
In these last 24 hours, you certainly seem to have seen a good deal more of it than you have for some time. I hope that you've been enjoying yourself.
Oh, yes. I've been ever so far. All round about. Miles and miles away. I've never been so free.
Do you like that?
Do you? We are alone together. I hope you don't mind particularly being alone with me.
My dear Miles, how can I mind? Although I've renounced any claim to your company, I greatly enjoy it. Why else should I stay on?
You stay on just for that?
Of course. I stay on as your friend. And I shall take an interest in you until something can be done for you.
that may be more worth your while.
Oh.
There's no need to be surprised, Miles. Don't you remember my telling you the night of the storm, when I came into your room, that there was nothing in all the world that I wouldn't do for you?
Oh, yes. I remember. But I think that was really to get me to do something for you.
Yes, it was partly to get you to do something. But you didn't do it, did you?
You wanted me to tell you something.
That's it. To tell me straight out what you have on your mind.
Ah, so that is what you stayed on for, is it?
Well, yes. I might as well tell you the truth. It was precisely for that reason that I've stayed on at Bly.
You want me to tell you now? Here.
There couldn't be a better time or place.
I'll tell you everything. I mean, I'll tell you anything you like. You'll stay on with me and we shall both be all right. And I will tell you. I will. But not now.
Why not now?
I want awfully to go out. And I have to see Luke.
Well, then go to Luke and I'll wait for what you promise. Only in return for that, I have one small request to make before you go.
How small?
Oh, a mere fraction of the whole. I want to know if yesterday afternoon you took a letter from the hall table.
Peter Quint stood outside the window like a sentinel before a prison. He was close to the glass, and glaring through it, offered once more to the room his white face of damnation. I faced the horror outside so that the boy, with his back to the window, should remain unaware of that awful presence. With Miles between us, it was like fighting with a demon for a human soul. There was a perfect dew of sweat on the boy's forehead, and his face, close to mine, was as white as the face against the glass. Presently, there came a sound that I drank like a waft of fragrance.
Yes, I took the letter.
Oh, my darling, darling boy.
The glare of the face at the window was fixed, as if to watch and wait. It was the very confidence that I might defy him, as well as my now positive certainty of the child's unconsciousness, that made me go on.
What did you take it for?
To see what you said about me.
You opened the letter?
Yes, I opened it.
My eyes left the window for an instant and were on Miles. All mockery was gone from him. He knew that he was in the presence, but he did not know of what. And he knew still less that I was also. And that I did know. When my eyes went back to the window, Quint had gone. I had triumphed.
And you find nothing in the letter, Miles?
Nothing.
So what have you done with it?
I've burnt it.
Is that what you did at school?
At school?
Did you take letters? Or other things?
What things?
Did you steal? Is that why they wouldn't take you back?
Did you know that?
I know everything.
I didn't steal.
Then what did you do?
I said things.
Is that all?
They thought it was enough.
And that's why they expelled you?
Well, I suppose I shouldn't have said the things I did.
To whom did you say these things?
I don't know.
Was it to everyone?
Oh, no, it was only to... No, I can't remember their names.
Well, were there so many then?
No, only a few. Those I liked. Friends.
And did they repeat what you said?
Yes, to those they liked. Their friends.
And these things then got round to the masters?
Yes, but I didn't think they'd tell.
They didn't. That's why I ask you.
Yes. Oh, it was too bad.
Too bad?
The things I suppose I sometimes said.
What were these things? Tell me, Miles. What were they? No more. No more, no more. Miles, don't look at the window. Look at me. At my eyes only. Don't look there, my darling. Oh, let me hold you tight, my precious little innocent. Oh, so tightly.
Is she here?
She?
Miss Jessel! Miss Jessel, of course!
No, Miles. It's not Miss Jessel. But it's at the window right in front of me.
There! Cowards of horror! There for the last time!
It's he!
Miles, tell me! Whom do you mean by he?
Peter Quint, you devil! Where is he?
Oh, what does it matter now, oh Martin? Oh, what will he ever matter? I'll have you, and if he has lost you forever. Turn around. Look! There he is! There! There!
He had turned and stared, and all little Miles had seen outside the window was the quiet day. I caught him as he fell and held him, but I knew at the end of a minute what it truly was that I held. We were alone with the quiet day, and his little heart, dispossessed, had stopped.
In The Turn of the Screw by Henry James, Charlotte Attenborough played the governess, Rosemary Leach, Mrs. Gross, Sam Crane, Miles, Sarah Jane Derrick, Flora, Michael Tudor Barnes, the Master of Bly, John Church, the coachman, and Jonathan Adams, the storyteller. The music was composed and realized by Wilfredo Acosta. The Turn of the Screw was dramatized for radio by John Tideman and directed by Glyn Dearman.